This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Lyndon Holland. And hey, first of all, right off the bat, congratulations on your BAFTA award for Best Game Music for Virginia. Congratulations. That's really awesome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
You are really up against some heavy hitters. Austin Wintry for Abzu and Mick Gordon for Doom and Takeshi Furukawa for The Last Guardian. And did you have any idea at all that you were going to win?
No, I had no idea, actually. I hadn't really prepared to win. I had written just on the off chance. I really, really thought I wasn't going to win. So I was kind of a bit, didn't really know what to do when I got up and had to give a speech. But yeah, I sort of thought that it was probably going to be Doom that would win, because there was a lot of, I don't know, that soundtrack was very, seemed to resonate with a lot of people. And I thought that, that would probably be, but saying that, any of them could have won. I mean, I think Abzu's soundtrack was absolutely incredible. Last Guardian, I haven't played yet, but I have listened to the music, and it's amazing. And the rest, Uncharted 4 is incredible. Yeah, I was completely surprised to find out that Our Little Game had won.
It was amazing, because I mean, I guess that's what the cool thing about game development these days is. A game like Virginia, made with a very, very small team, can go head to head with a AAA like Uncharted 4, and it seems as though the playing field is a lot more level now, so it must be a really exciting time to be in game development and writing music for games as well.
I think so. I think that if you're an entry-level composer, you can work on something that has a lot of scope for, quite exciting music, which is, I think, sometimes the difference, well, from a composer's standpoint, one of the main differences, aside from all the technical hurdles that you need to get past, but the main difference between film and video games at the moment is that a low-budget video game can really be quite an exciting thing, with a low-budget film. I mean, I shouldn't, there are examples that sort of prove me wrong, but a lot of low-budget films that I've worked on tend to be, there's a certain amount of things you can't do when you don't have the money, because shooting film is really expensive. But when you're making a game, you're building everything from scratch anyway, so you can make a game in space or science fiction or whatever, whereas the limitations of the money in film means that you end up working on kitchen sink dramas a lot. One of the reasons which I was excited to sort of move into, because my original background is from film, and mm-hmm. I moved into video games for this reason.
Yeah, I'd love to know how you got attached to the team that made Virginia in the first place, because you were right in there in the beginning, right?
Yeah, so I came on really early on. Jonathan Burrows and Terry Kenny, who are the two creative directors of Virginia, they had just been made redundant and had set up Variable State, and they decided on this game that they wanted to make, sort of reasonably specific. They played 30 Flights of Loving and they loved that, and they wanted to make something similar to that, but with through the lens of something like Twin Peaks and X-Files. And they just put an ad on TIGSource, which is an internet forum for game development. And I just responded to it. I just fresh out of film school, and it was exactly the sort of thing I wanted to work on. And I ended up working on it. And then we made a prototype demo, took that to EGX, which is a festival here, games convention, and got picked up later on from 505, and we just started working on the game full time.
Wow, that's so exciting, because there are people who work for years waiting to work on a game, and in the meantime they have to take little bits of jobs and things they really hate doing until they finally get a good fit with a team. So that's a really remarkable story.
Yeah, I was incredibly lucky. I mean, I put a lot down to luck, actually. I mean, I've heard lots of stories from people. When I was at film school, we had lots of, successful filmmakers and, whoever come in, give their story about how they got into the industry. And there's no real shortcut of do this and you'll get it. There's all quite sort of strange stories that people had. And I was like, what are the chances of that happening? But it does happen, because
Yeah, it happened to you. So.
that picked up that, you know, that opportunity came around for me just at the right time. So it's, I suppose, as long as you're willing to just go for it, I think that you've got every chance to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, did you know right from the beginning that the story, first of all, the story is told in such an interesting way with no dialogue and very little reading, and so you have to pick up clues and facial expressions and body languages and stuff, which makes the music obviously critical, and the music does a lot of the heavy lifting in the game to move the story forward. Was that a decision that you made right off the bat early on in development?
Yeah, but well, the original pitch that was, well, that was the brief, I suppose, that was described to me in the job description, was that they wanted to do that because Terry is an animator really by trade. That's what he is, a character animator, and that's what he does very well. And so we thought, well, JB and Terry, Jonathan and Terry, thought that they could get a lot of mileage out of telling a story without having to use any dialogue or writing to slow things down. And you know, this is sort of what 35 sort of Loving did as well. So it's, you know, very much sort of influenced from that game, Brendan Cheung's 35 of Loving. But like the idea of using music to tell the story is something that they came to at a stage where they thought, well, we really need to get someone else on board to make this happen. Right, because I think at one stage we were thinking of maybe even just like using licensed music, or you know, or just getting someone in at the end. But I think when they started to realize the restrictions, I suppose, without using dialogue or text, I think that they realized they needed to, you know, get music on early and see if someone, you know, a composer could help out with basically telling them what you can and can't do with music, because there's an assumption that music can kind of be really descriptive, and it can in some ways, but it can't, there's some things it can't do. So it was useful, I think, to have me on early on to sort of, you know, help write the story.
And you ended up writing just a huge amount of music too, because there are very few moments in the game where there isn't any music. So that must have been an interesting challenge too, to really use the cues that they were giving you and the concept art and then the screenplay that you ended up working on as well, to know where the music should go.
Yeah, there's our process with all that was, well, first of all, we really, or you know, it's something that we really wanted to do was have the music function like it does in a film, which is to say that when a scene changes in a film, the music doesn't care about that. It doesn't stop playing when the scene cuts, which in a video game, I suppose it's more typical that you have the scene has to load, and so therefore there's a break in the music for you know, things loading in and out of RAM, all these technical things. We sort of decided that we'd like to see if we could get around that by having music cues just bridge scene changes and to give this fluidity to the score. And that's kind of how we came about deciding that the way that the music should function. The way that I started writing was we had the script in a Excel spreadsheet, and each cell was a scene, and I sort of just marked up all these cells and decided where these music should sort of transition through, and ended up being a lot of cells colored in green. Wasn't too many that didn't have music in, which I was a bit worried at first because I was wondering whether I was putting too much music in the game. But it was a really iterative process. Like, we did take some out and we did some change. After we started implementing it into the game, some of it didn't work that I'd written for scripts, so we had to change things. But it was a useful process to start like that.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask how the music did evolve during the development time, and how close is the final music in the game? How close is that to what you initially had in mind?
It's difficult for me to remember that. I mean, I found some old demos recently, which was quite amusing to listen to because some of the music's very similar, some of the themes are similar, but the sort of instrumentation is quite different. I think early on, it was going to be more synth led, with some guitar-y elements. But I don't know. I think as the story progressed, it seemed more interesting to use more of the orchestra, and then once we found out that we got funding to record with an orchestra, I think that really swayed it for me. And it's more, I think it's more orchestra heavy, but there is some synth elements still left in there because of just a stylistic thing. I don't know. I quite like those soundtracks from the early 90s, which sort of blend the two of sort of old synthesizers with orchestral sounds.
Yeah, it really creates an interesting mix, especially because, I mean, you had the City of Prague Philharmonic, and they are a phenomenal orchestra, and then the synth sounds blended in. It's subtle, but I mean, so many people have said it harkens back to the music in Twin Peaks and other David Lynch films, but there are lots of others too. And it really gives a sense of this era of Virginia in 1992. And I think what's so cool about it is, you know, you're looking back at that time, it doesn't seem that long ago, but then you realize, well, there were no cell phones, there was no internet, and it almost seems like kind of a simpler time. But did you take that into consideration at all when you were crafting the music?
I suppose just from a purely aesthetic perspective, the synthesizers, I didn't want anything to sound too sort of modern, and I don't know even know what that means, because these days a lot of music is, and a lot of modern music is looking back to old synthesizers, so it's sort of a moot point really. But I kind of just like those sounds, and I just like using them first and foremost. But I guess that it does tie into the time period. So yeah, I suppose the time period did sort of play into the type of music that's been written. But I think more so, I mean, it was just for references really. The movies and the TV series from that era that had a particular type of music which we wanted to try and evoke.
It suits the time and the story and just the whole mood of the game just so well. And there's one track in particular that you've pointed out, Sojourner's Truth, which is in the Roadhouse segment. And you mentioned that that's a really important track for you. And I'd love to know why, what it was about that particular track that is so important and so memorable for you.
That was originally written in its form that it's in now, more or less. That was in the original demo that we took to EGX back in 2014. So it's kind of been part of Virginia from the beginning, really. And I don't know, like, it obviously people have sort of have noted that it's you know heavily influenced by the music of Twin Peaks, and especially you know certain songs that Julie Cruise worked on, and that moment in the bar is sort of, I suppose, referential to you know Blue Velvet or that scene in Twin Peaks. So there was a very clear, I suppose, homage to those moments. But I think it's the first moment in the game where Anne and Maria are sort of getting closer together, and so it's the first moment of there's a sort of hopefulness to their relationship. And so I guess sort of put a lot of time into making that moment really sing. So we go out of the band and go into a orchestral suite which still playing the music but in a different form, and now you're in this magical moment where you're sitting on top of the water tower. We wanted to really just, since we've got no dialogue or anything, we just wanted to try and make that moment as magical as possible so people kind of understood that their relationship was growing.
Thank you. love that moment, and I love just the visuals of them just sitting there drinking, having a beer, and looking at the stars. And it's such a relief to have that moment, because so much of the game is very dark and very mysterious, and I wouldn't say frustrating exactly, but it takes a lot of mental energy to really pay attention and read all of the cues. And so it's almost like you can tell the characters are having a moment to kind of relax as well. And it gives, as a player, it gives you a chance to sort of just catch your breath for a minute. So
it's sort of not really about, at that moment, it's not about the case, which is quite a nice relief, I suppose, both for characters and the audience.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard from some composers who, after they work on their first game, they realize what a tough learning curve it is, because it's not like writing for film or TV, but because this music that you wrote is closer to music for a film. Did you have a steep learning curve too?
Yeah, it's very experimental, I think, because there wasn't really any examples that I could find anyway that I could really sort of draw from. So I didn't quite know how it was all going to fit together at the beginning. So a lot of it was just playing around with the software that I use. It's called FMod. And I was sort of figuring out what lengths can I make this music interactive? What are the restrictions? What can you do successfully? And it definitely wouldn't have worked if the rest of the team weren't so on board with it, because there was so much give and take when it came to getting some of these music systems working. There was sometimes we had decided that the music should not be the slate of a game. By that I mean that the game sort of follows the music.
Wow.
in a sort of way. Those are decisions which are kind of like red flags, I think, in other games. But because Virginia isn't a mechanical game in any way, really what Virginia is about is telling a story, that we felt that the best way to sort of tell the story is to really allow the music to sort of flourish in this moment. And I'll try and give a specific example. So if in the game you're walking through a scene and the music is playing and you click on an animation or click on an object that triggers an animation, that will then trigger a cue in the music to change. But because of the way music works, in that you have bars and beats, you need to wait for it to sound musically satisfying. It might have to wait between a few seconds for that music to actually transition. And so what that means is that the game has to allow for that time. And there's lots of different weird ways in which we achieved that. Each specific example had a different way of tackling it. But it meant that we could keep the music in sync with the game, so that we could have moments like the scene would cut in sync with the music. That just can't really be done unless the game and the music are kind of like playing off each other.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing because usually it's the other way around, and the composer, it gets like sort of tied in knots sometimes trying to make the music fit with the boss battle or whatever it is that the player's doing on screen, even down to like quarter like 16th notes, so it can like turn on a dime and stuff. So I think what that gives your music for Virginia, though, is this sense of it just it takes as long as it takes, and the phrases in the music can be longer, and there's much more of a chance to just have this endless line of or long lines of music rather than just tight little cues. So it sounds like it was a really interesting process to finally make that all happen.
Yeah, and I think it can be pushed further as well. I mean, I'm sort of slightly hesitant about sort of recommending it for other games because I think there's a very particular game that it works for in Virginia that you can take your time and, you know, wait around doing something else while the music ticks over. I know that's not really what you want in other games, that other things have to take priority, but I think there's lots more you can do. But I was imagining that I haven't really seen in other games, but just I was thinking of like a Mass Effect dialogue tree, what that would mean if you had a music system that was as branching as that. So you would go off in a different direction, the music would carry on in one direction if you did one thing, and it would go in a different direction if you did another thing. And you know, it would mean generating lots, writing a lot of music, but I think it'd be an interesting thing
Oh yeah,
to think about.
that would be so cool. Actually, Austin Rintoury sort of pitched that idea to one of the studios where he was working on a game, and he did that very thing where he wanted the music to be kind of bare bones, depending on waiting for something to happen, and then actually sort of ramping it up layers and layers and layers. And the studio said, "No, we don't really have the budget for that right now,"
Ah,
but.
that's a shame.
Yeah, I know. It's a really interesting idea though, and I think it illustrates how cool it is that there's all these amazing software programs and sample libraries and programs like Cubase where you can really get creative and you're not just tied to the very simple things of just, well, here's the melody and we're just going to repeat it over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like with all aspects of game design, there's so much scope, there's so much room for it to develop, and yeah, there's just so much you can do. I think there's sort of like the open frontier for interactive music, and I think we're kind of just getting started. I remember playing video games like late 90s, early 2000s. There just wasn't any interactive music at all. It was all just sort of like loops that would just play around, and now I think people are really just trying to be more creative and just embracing just the media.
Yeah, definitely. And it's neat too because there's not like just one way to write the music. There's not just one sound like there was in the late 90s and early 2000s, where unless you had an orchestra, your game just like wasn't on the map. Now there are so many different options and sometimes no music at all, even except for very key moments. So it's really interesting, and I'm just so curious about what's going to come next, which is really neat. When I talked with Jessica Curry after her BAFTA win for her music for Rapture last year, she said that it actually led to some really surprising commissions for concert music from some UK choruses and ensembles. And I mean, I'm wondering if that is a path that you'd like to take, or you still want to stay in the game industry for a while.
That's really interesting. I would, yeah. I mean, I do love just writing music. Often, writing music for a video game, you're kind of writing it to just music. There's not usually a film in the background that you're working to, so it is sort of effectively just writing music. And one step removed from that would be having no brief at all. Just write what you want. I mean, that's sort of the Holy Grail, I suppose, for composers, just to sort of write whatever they want. I mean, if something like that came up, I probably wouldn't say no. There's other interesting opportunities as well, which I mean, I feel like theatre music and theatre is not too far removed from video games, or at least it has the potential to share similar ideas. You know, theatre being a spontaneous and unpredictable medium like video games, you can't totally predict the timeline of an actor's performance, just like you can't totally predict or can't predict at all the way that a player will navigate through a video game. And so the same tools, I would imagine, would apply into theatre. I don't know a lot about that, but I don't know whether there are, if there is an appetite for interactive music in theatre. I mean, it's something I'd be interested in if that came about.
Yeah, that would be really neat. And the other thing that's interesting about that, the sort of extra layer of complexity, is that because it's live, each performance is a little bit different, which is really cool. So, you were working on some games kind of simultaneously with Virginia, and I'm wondering, did that help you at all? When you get stuck on one, you could just kind of hop over and work on something else for a while.
It can be nice to sort of have a bit of a break. Often, the projects that I worked on, I was sort of full time. Well, I was full time on Virginia, so I wasn't. When I wasn't working on music, I was doing everything that I did for the sound design and the sort of music script, the audio scripting in the case of those. So that was a nice break from just, you know, when I didn't want to think too much about music, I could use a different part of my brain, I suppose, to do sound design, which is still a technical task, still, you know, still creative, but it's a different sort of creativity, I think. But when I was working on music for other video games, it was usually in the evenings or at weekends. So I wasn't working on the company dime.
The sound design in Virginia is really wonderful too. It's really brilliant. It's just, it brings the world alive. Were those all live recordings of sounds, or did you end up using some sample libraries, or?
A lot of it was live. I recorded. There's a lot of there's a lot of first person animation in Virginia, which was all recorded live, pretty much. I mean, I did all that in my bedroom. I have a pretty sort of basic setup in my room, but I managed to get it all done. But there was a lot of the outdoor sounds. A lot of that was library, but heavily edited and mixed together. And as I actually had a lot of fun working with how to present atmosphere sounds. I suppose one technique would be just to have a single stereo or 5.1 sound that it's just playing in a room or outside. But another way, and I find this more successful, is to have lots of mono sounds or stereo sounds which are dotted in the physical space, and so that when you move through the environment, you get a surround sound effect. The software would sort of decode it into 5.1, and that's something that I'd never done before. And I'm sure that's for a seasoned sound designer, that's probably not very basic, but it's something that I thought was really cool. And I should say I was learning on the job, really, as a sound designer. I'd never really done much sound design before, but the film school I went to had a good sound design department, and I had housemates who were sound designers, so I sort of learned a lot from them. I think just it rubbed off on me. The key, I suppose, ideas around audio production kind of interweave into sound design. So it's, you're not completely starting from zero, I think, if you're a composer.
Yeah, and also you have, because you're both, you kind of have a sense of what should be in the foreground and what's in the background, and you're not like fighting with an audio director because it's you.
I mean, that was one of the most liberating things. I mean, I do like working with people, and I do enjoy working for with sound designers and dubbing mixers and audio engineers. But it was quite refreshing in a way, just to have complete control over the soundtrack. And in a way, it was sort of quicker because there wasn't any time spent on any discussions about what should be done, and people got getting the wrong end of a stick about what moment it should be. It was just I could just do it and it was done. And in a way, if we had someone else working on the game doing sound design, I kind of wonder whether, I think we would have got to the same result in the end, because I think that a talented sound designer would be able to recognize when it should be a sound moment, when it should be a music moment. But I think it might probably would have just took a bit longer. And this is working on a game like Virginia, we were able to do that. But I think if you were to scale Virginia up and it's to be a much larger game, I think that you just have to work with a larger sound team. So it's something which it was just nice to have on Virginia, but I think on other projects it would be too much work to do everything.
Yeah, probably. So is there anything in the pipeline that you can share with projects that you're working on right now, or is it all still a secret?
So I've been working with Variable State on some new ideas, nothing that we can announce at the moment, but and some other, I can't really announce anything. Actually, everything's too secret. I'm sure that when things do get announced, I'll publicly announce why I'm working on them. But I do have some projects in lined up. So hopefully, sometime soon, I'll be able to talk about them.
That'll be great, because I can't wait to hear what's next. And Lyndon, it's been so much fun to talk with you and find out about the digging in deep with the music and the sound design for Virginia. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the interview.